Comic Book Club News gives you the comic book news you need to know first thing in the morning every weekday in the form of digestible 3 to 5 minute long podcasts. Comic Book Club News recaps breaking news stories from Marvel, DC Comics, and beyond, Monday through Friday. New episodes drop 6 a.m. ET in the Comic Book Club News feed, so they're ready for you when you're ready for the day. Comic Book Club News. You hear it second or third, possibly fourth.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club! Woo! I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. Maybe you're listening to us later on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. Wherever you're listening or watching, thank you
for checking us out.
We appreciate it. We have a bunch of great guests on the show to you today that I'm very excited to bring in. But first, we should talk about the drink of the week. Now, our resident chef, Brett Macris, has been curating drinks from the Gotham City bullets. Cocktail Book. This week, we are drinking the Elegy, which is a drink that Kathy Kane drinks. I made it with too much seltza.
Come on, man.
I made it as well. I didn't have juice, so I just used Aperol, which is more alcohol. So that's it's sort of a juice of booze.
It sounds like a combination apple and alcohol.
So it's dry vermouth, blanc vermouth, pomegranate juice, club soda, and a lemon twist for garnish. It's very refreshing. I have never just had two vermouths before, but I guess that's how Kathy Kane does it.
Wow.
So who am I to say differently?
You're like a 60-year-old Italian man sitting in the playing bocce in the afternoon. And I mean that literally and with his drink.
Oh, man.
I have actually a bocce set right over there.
Pete plays bocce on the weekends.
That's right.
Yeah?
You're all falling to pieces. You're all falling to pieces in front of my eyes.
You're talking about this stuff like drinking in the afternoon sun, a little bocce. Come on.
Yeah, cigar. Talk about World War II when you fought in it.
Yep.
Nice. Later on in the show, we are going to have Max Allen Collins here to talk about his new book, Fancy Anders Goes to War. But first, we're going to bring in our first two guests, see if they can work it out, talk about their new project, which is Stan Lee's Alliance. I was clicking a lot of things at the same time. Stan Lee's Alliance, A New Reality, which is out now on Audible. They are Ryan Silbert and Luke Lieberman. And hey, we got Luke here. Let's see Ryan can make his way in too. He was having some audio problems before the show.
How does that one work?
There
you go. You got it. Guys,
only a voice my mother can love.
No, this is good. And I like the...
And you guys.
Holding up the microphone.
We love it.
Spinner rack in the background, dude. Killing it.
Very cool. Wait, before we get into your book and everything going on to it, what do you have on the spinner rack, Ryan?
Me? Well, I'm moving on Friday, so it's getting cleared out here. But I got the old killer. I've got some of Wasted Space, Cold War, Thumbs, Summer Blonde.
Thumbs, nice.
Thumbs.
You know, San Francisco.
Nice. Where
How do you rotate?
To? Oh, we have different questions.
Both ways.
Yeah. No, I know
DC side.
I know.
It's all good. Headlopper, actually. I think you guys turned
me on. Oh, yeah. Headlopper. Headlopper.
Good choice.
Big fans. I'm the number one fan, actually, of Headlock. Oh,
I never heard of it until you told me about it two years ago.
You know,
there you go.
We're here to help, especially
patented
me.
Justin Tyler bump is what's
Are there decapitations involved in that book?
Maria Kondo, you got to touch it to give it joy. So
yeah, here's the thing about Headlopper. I like the issues where there is headlopping, and occasionally there's issues where there is no headlopping, and it's a real disappointment.
Well, that's the thing. They pick and choose, and they really want you to want it. You can't always just expect. Yeah, for free.
The title.
Really, you know, like Luke's writing. Then he likes to headlock everything in any comic he's ever written. A lot of heads on the floor.
Nice. Well, let's talk about that then. Let's talk about Stan Lee's Alliance: A New Reality, which, as mentioned, is out from Audible now. So this is the second. I mean, what do you categorize that? Since it's Audible exclusive, is it a book? Does it even count as a book,
dude,
man?
What are you doing?
Alex, gotcha question off the jump.
Or is it a radio show, an old-timey radio show?
Ooh,
yeah, there's something else called audio.
Never heard of it. Don't know what you're talking about.
An audio event?
Yeah.
Is it an audio event? I forgot. I don't know what the term is in the paper, but I believe that at some point we will be able to print this into book form or perhaps in graphic novel form. So at some point, it will be a book you can hold in your hand.
Nice. Very exciting. Yeah.
But it was one of those things where...
You have to suffer with Will Wheaton reading it to you at this point.
Oh, man.
That guy.
You know, we did it because Stan was really into that whole vibe. You know, like making this into an audio original from the onset. Because as you guys know, like the whole comic form that he developed with the Marvel Universe connected and all the cliffhangers came out of the serial radio dramas. So that's why we launched it this way.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Stan was a big fan of like crossing media. He was always like writing comics with an eye toward doing something else with them.
Well, this was also an opportunity, I think, to do something a little different for me. He'd never done an audiobook, which at some level, I remember it just kind of came up and he's like, oh, I haven't done one of those. Like it just the idea that it was something he hadn't done before in his early 90s when we were talking about this was kind of in and of itself a good enough reason to go this direction. But I think he also liked the idea that there was this kind of collaboration with the listener because we were going to kind of paint a picture with words, but there wasn't going to be an artist there to spoon feed you the visuals. You were going to have to kind of make them up yourself and kind of be the collaborative partner, I think is something that really appeals to him.
It's true that Kevin said in the chat that Stan did do audio dramas. He did a Doctor Strange in the 60s and he did FF in the 70s, but this is for original characters, like things that were developed for the audio medium so that there was never, you know, no underlying material there to start with.
Yeah. Now, what was different then about taking this world that you created for the first book and then moving it to audio for the second book? Were there any challenges? Was there anything in particular?
There was an audio. The first book what premiered on Audible also.
Oh, then I don't know what I'm talking about.
It came out as a book. There was a 6-month window where it was only on Audible and then the print book followed.
Oh, okay. Never mind that. Retract.
Well, but to take the flip of Alex's question, so then how do you develop directly for audio? Like, what's the process like?
I think, let me put this. I mean, it actually kind of, since we went into it in that direction, I guess I really didn't. First of all, developing our development process and the kind of world building process started years prior. And it was just this kind of big expansive world building exercise where we didn't really know. I mean, when we started this process out with Stan, we certainly didn't know that it was going to end up as an audiobook. That wasn't the vision for it or anything else.
Right.
We were just creating stories and characters and a kind of world for all this to exist in. And then when Audible became a possible sort of initial release, then we, you know, kind of took some of the story and characters out of our development and ran with it as the first story. You know, this is Stan kind of chose what should be the initial story in the world, but it wasn't developed. Now, when you're talking about sort of after that point, once we were on board with Audible and we were writing a story sort of specifically to start there, I guess I didn't really think of it as any different than writing any other kind of manuscript. We did notice, actually, it was more when we went from Audible and HMH and our editor at HMH wanted to flesh out a bunch of the descriptions and things like that. There was actually a fair bit of rewriting and sort of there was more meat added onto it once it went into printed form. So I think it was actually sort of leaner and meaner in the original audio manuscript. Ryan, can you tell me if I'm wrong there?
No, that's about right. I mean, those two mediums are very similar, obviously, because we're taking a manuscript and creating audio around it. And, you know, in the future, there'll be some, you know, additional multi-voice kind of opportunities, like more like a radio play. But the best in class, having Will Wheaton do the reading on this, I think, is what lifts things off the page and makes it like an imaginative experience for a listener. I don't know if you guys listen to audiobooks on like going to sleep, but like, you know, I tend to listen to like, you know, Joe Hill and like Stephen King stuff while sleeping. So it's never, it's a very different kind of experience.
Wait, while you're sleeping?
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Just walk right into a nightmare.
You know, 20th century ghosts can, you know,
I have a question because I usually read before I go to sleep. At the point I know I need to stop reading is when my eyes are rolling back in my head. I'm like, well, close the book, put it away. If you're listening to an audiobook when you're going to sleep, do you know where to go back to? Or are you skipping whole chunks? Okay. Or how are you just using it as white noise?
I figured this out, which is that you just put it. It's a 45-minute. You just put a stop point. It's like you can put a you tell the device how long to play for, so that you're never that far off. I usually just give myself 45 minutes, and if I'm not, you know, that's so I got to back up 15. Although it's going to sound really bad and conceited, but I've actually been listening to New Reality to go to sleep for like the last 2 months, and that's
nice.
To me, it just puts me right out, and I don't have to worry about getting lost in the story because, you know.
I don't know if New Reality puts you right to sleep is exactly the thing that you want to put out there.
me as a
working on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it's like how I just listened to an edited down version of our podcast where it's just Pete talking for me.
Oh, it's just silence and white noise.
It's comforting to me.
This is... very obvious, and I think everybody knows this, but unfortunately we are now post-Stan at this point. You know, he laid down the ideas for this thing. He worked with you guys clearly on this project, but what is it like releasing it now that he is no longer around?
I think I felt that more intensely actually with the first release, because the first one, you know, we finished it while he was with us, but the release and, you know, the recording of Yara, who did the reading of the book, and the release through Audible was 6 months after he passed, I want to say, something like that. And so it was all very present and sort of intense. And mostly at that point, what I was thinking was just, I wish he was here to see this. I mean, that was the kind of thought going through my head. I mean, I had a little bit, I still had that thought with New Reality, but it kind of wasn't as fresh and it wasn't quite as, you know, it wasn't the same thing. I think, you know, the obligation is that you just want to feel like you're doing something he would be proud of. I mean, New Reality is a story where he had a lot of, you know, I mean, he obviously wasn't around for the scripting on that one, but he, a lot of the story elements and things like that came from development that we did with him. So he's very present in that story, but I guess it's you wish that you could have. I mean, I remember when the first book was printed, when Trick of Light was printed, all I wanted to do was just be able to like bring it in and hand it to him, say, here, Stan, here's what happened, you know, here it is, look, we made it, you know. And that was kind of, it was upsetting that we couldn't do that. With New Reality, I think he would have liked to have seen kind of how that came out. I think he would have liked where we landed with that. I just, you know, obviously I wish he could have seen it.
Yeah. Are there more plans that you laid out for other books at this point with him, or is this kind of as far as you went?
No, like this development process, I guess, so people who don't know, like Stan gave me my first job after film school, and he was kind of a friend and mentor of mine for decades. And my day job was actually right down the street from his office. So I used to just go over in lunches and kind of hang with him. And, you know, not every day, but, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks, I would just call his assistant up and say, hey, when's Stan free? When does he have a minute? I would just wander into his office and catch up with him. And then we started coming up with ideas around sort of the inception of the internet and his sort of disillusionment with what it was supposed to be and what it turned into. And, that process was about 5 years long. So there was just a lot of characters and whatnot that haven't been worked in yet that we have lying around. There's a project that we're not allowed to announce yet, but it's going to be announced soon. It's a little frustrating to us, actually, that we aren't ready to announce it just yet. But
yeah, I see the look on your face is like, I want to say this so hard right now.
I can't. But what I will tell you is that there is, you know, in there, there's the kind of world that we set up with him. And we try to sort of be precise about it. There's part of the story that is literally something that was written where he was very involved in the conception of this particular scene and whatnot, where he'll actually have attribution as a writer. And then the rest of the story was based on development that we did with him, but Ryan and I are kind of running with it at that point. So we kind of, and they'll be also visually separated because never mind, I've already given away too much. So never mind, I'm gonna shut up.
There are 50 plus characters that have not been revealed yet at this point. So like this was all supposed to be from the jump, like street level heroes. That's how A Trick of Light was built on. A New Reality explored sort of the inception of the internet in the 90s, at least, you know, so with this idea of like early internet prodigy AOL, you know, that CompuServe, that kind of stuff. And then exactly, which one was the Woo? Was that for CompuServe or for prodigy?
What are you repping, Pete? I'm so curious.
Good times remembering all that fun stuff.
So many questions. Yeah, not the right time to ask about them, but I want to hear your CompuServe journaling story.
So that is the genesis of a New Reality story with Stan, was that it was this idea that, you know, like Luke was saying, the genesis of the internet, he was curious about, well, what happens to these digital Atlantises that all went underwater when the internet, you know, breaks up? Like there's whole cultures and societies that no longer exist. Obviously, we take that into the science fiction realm, right? So that's the reality. Yeah. And then, you know, these new projects that we're developing now off of that, you know, builds from the street level, you know, to the sky and then beyond. So, you know, you can imagine where that kind of goes if you follow the simple kind of Marvel Stan framework from the 60s.
Yeah. Now, Stan, famous for cameos in all the MCU stuff, is there an idea or something that he came up with that really you feel like you're is his cameo in either of these projects?
Well, he did the opening. I mean, he recorded his introduction to both of them, so that would be sort of his direct cameo for the audio. I mean, he actually sort of appears at the beginning of the book. In terms,
in just like the genesis, the creative process. Yeah,
I mean, he was involved in really all of the characters. There's one character in particular that we kind of, I don't want to say we modeled it off of him. I mean, the inventor is always, I've always kind of seen that as, you know, quasi Stan Sands. I mean, there was a point in time where we actually thought about trying to have Stan record the audio of that character, and that just didn't work out.
But the spoiler, like spoilers aside for the books, but one of them has been out for a while now. Like, you know, the idea that there are multiple kind of inventions of reality, of people like reinventing themselves. So like Stan, that is very much a Stan imbued idea. And all those characters, Nia is a, you know, I think we can talk about this at this point, you know, is an artificial intelligence that mimics poses as a 16-year-old or, you know, teen on the internet as a real person, and but with no friends, you know, they don't connect that way. And similarly, Cameron is a character who's a young character, sort of like an inverted Tony Stark, bad at inventions, wants to be a YouTuber, but, you know, presents himself differently on the internet. Those are all things that are very Stan, because, I mean, you know, he created characters like that with Spider-Man. He created the characters like that in his own life, you know, with his reinvention of who he was as an actor and as a writer and as an editor, as a publisher, as a marketer. You know, he's always changing kind of hats. So, yeah.
Well, there was also, I think, kind of the fundamental issue, particularly in Trick of Light, had to do with identity and this idea of a kind of the alter ego that you have, the sort of digital online identity that you have, and then who you really are and what the dynamic and the relationships are between, you know, who you are and what you present to the world and your sort of curated, manicured presentation of yourself as opposed to the kind of raw, real version of yourself. And that's... First of all, that was something that very much came from Stan, but that's a theme and a concept that we're going to keep playing with as we move forward on other things.
I mean, speaking of other things, though, it sounds like I'd imagine you kind of at least have talked about this in some sense, but you've got the audiobooks, you've got the printed paper books. Are there thoughts to expand into other medium as well?
Oh, Edward, hold on a second.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of the mediums that like we could explore with this are kind of, you know, very wide. I mean, I think that certainly, you know, comics for sure, because that's, you know, the roots of Stan, but also something that Luke, you know, has done a lot of over the last 10 years, you know, TV and film, because also, you know, we have backgrounds in that. But, you know, we're like always looking for good partners. And I think like kind of what the, you know, basis of all of these projects are is like finding best in class kind of partners like Will, Audible, HarperCollins, Yara, you know, like that. That's kind of like the elevated kind of point of view we're taking with it. So like any of the kind of mediums we enter, we're always looking for like the best kind of partners.
Well, I think, by the way, that's kind of like when you're talking earlier about what it feels like to do stuff now without Stan. I mean, I think one of the basic obligations is that we're not trying to just schlock IP out that, you know, let's go make a, you know, here's a cash grab. We'll make an animation with this crappy new company over here or whatever. Where everything's got to be premium. Everything's got to be with, you know, best in class partners. The thing that I'm not allowed to talk about is because one of our best in class partners is slow with his work. But that's
no, everybody's fast. Everybody's fast. Nobody's fast. You wear too many things. But like that's the you know, you guys, I think we talked about this last time I was on. Like I've become so disillusioned with this idea of like comics becoming like IP, like what do they call it? Like IP farm or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like then like podcasts became that. Like all the things that I love become,
I mean, I wish something else. I wish they become that, but go
you guys are all cast.
Play a cool, Justin. Is that
yeah, play
you?
Cool. Come on.
Yo, take it easy.
What if there's a premium person listening out?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But like, you know, like that's for us, it's not about that. Like I don't want to make stuff that just is like supposed to be ported somewhere else. Like I just want to make good stuff like in the place that we're making it. So like if it's good audio, it should be good audio. Good like good comics should just be good comics. It shouldn't be like, oh, with an eye towards, I don't know. I like the universe, but you know, it always felt like
a lot of this will be sort of driven by, you know, who are the sort of, it's going to be driven by quality. So what medium do we feel like we can produce quality in? And that's a lot of that's going to depend on who our partners are in the medium and whatnot. I mean, we're not opposed to any medium. Obviously stuff like books and comics or national publishing is kind of natural for this because that's its genesis. But beyond that, it's going to be a matter of where we think we can create something that would make Stan proud and that you know, Stan would be happy to be associated with. That's really going to be where we choose to go. And we're not in any hurry. We have a very long view of this.
Well, to that end, though, I mean, not to keep pushing you on this, but you have the first two out. Are you working on the third one at this point, or is that still a question mark?
No. The third one's, like, for sure, as you could see from, like, the way we've done it, it's like, this is a prequel. Then we had this other, you know, but kind of prequel sequel. Then we had Trick of Light as other foundation, and then we're going, you know, to other dimensions in space. So, you know, it'll be fun.
See, you're already getting, we're trying so hard not to talk about this stuff, but...
Other dimensions in space. Other dimensions in space. I mean, it just occurred to me the other day that, like, and I think we could debate about this all day. In Endgame, are they throwing? Because if Doctor Strange gets his magic from other dimensions and he's throwing things at Thanos, are they throwing dimensions at that? Is like a dimensional fight plus a planet getting thrown?
And what happens to the other dimensions?
I'm asking you guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, opening the door to the multiverse is. Everything is doing that right now. So yes, I would say 100%, even if it wasn't intended to be that, when we look back on a scene in an episode of Loki season 4, that's going to be a couple dimensions thrown around.
Dimension throwing. That's an Olympic sport.
I love it.
Yeah, future Olympics.
Yeah, gold medal for me, I think, in that one. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the project. Very excited to see the next one. Very excited to see whatever it is you're teasing.
No, the teasing is back. I feel teased. Teased right now.
You'll know when it happens. You'll know.
Awesome. You'll know. You guys will very know. Exciting. Guys, have a great night.
Thank you.
Good luck with your move, Ryan.
Yes.
Yes. Bye-bye, guys.
See ya. Bye. All right, there we go. Once again, that's Ryan Silbert and Luke Lieberman from Stan Lee's Alliance, A New Reality, which is out now on Audible. Definitely go check it out. And now we're going to invite our next guest into the stream here. Hopefully, fingers crossed, this works. He is probably best known for Road to Perdition by this audience here, but he has a new book called Fancy Anders Goes to War, which is out digitally on October 5th that we are going to talk to him about. His name is Max Allen Collins. And we'll see if he comes in here.
And here he comes. And come on down.
There we go. Hello.
Look at that.
How are you? Max, thank you so much for coming on the show.
That was a very interesting half hour.
Thank you. So let's talk about this book. Let's talk about Fancy Anders Goes to War, which is the kickoff of a new series. And I believe the concept is it actually Rosie the Riveter Dies or somebody like Rosie the Riveter Dies?
Well, see, I'm getting a terrible echo here. Is there something I should do?
Maybe if you have some headphones, maybe that would work. Possibly.
Are you hearing me?
Yes. We are, yes. You sound very powerful.
Yeah,
you
really do. It's very impressive.
This should be a Stan Lee
section. Yeah, exactly. He's haunting.
I need help, guys. I don't know what to do about this.
Yes. Well, if you don't have headphones, you could probably... Do you have speakers going on or anything like that?
Maybe okay. The speakers are doing it.
Yeah, maybe if you turn them down a little bit.
Oh. There's some power there. That's where there's some juice there.
Is that normal?
Yeah. There we go.
That's called problem solving, and I can't believe it worked.
Tech help.
Okay, that's turned me off, isn't it?
No, you're there. We hear you.
We can hear you. We can hear you great.
Yeah.
Don't touch a thing. You're doing great.
Is that better?
Echo's back.
Is that all right?
Here's what I would say, and I love doing this live. If you have separate speakers that are exterior to your computer, maybe unplug them and your computer audio will take over because I think the echo is from the speakers interplaying.
Can you hear me?
Yes. You sound perfect right now.
Perfect. Don't do anything else.
Okay, but I've got to be able to hear you. That's the problem.
That's the trick.
Okay.
Oh, can you hear us right now?
Okay, I think we can do this.
Okay.
Good. All right. We got this.
All right.
I think that would have made a good half hour, though.
Well, our talk with God.
Fancy Anders is not a comic book. It's a kind of a... I mean, I'm a comic book writer at times, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was we asked this very good... artist in the UK, Faye Dalton, to do the cover. And when we saw the cover, I said, well, then we got to have illustrations. And I love the whole retro idea. It kind of went back to my wife used to tell me about when she was a kid reading the old Nancy Drew books that had been like probably her grandmother's, that had running boards and had all this old 40s stuff, and how she hated all the updated, because I think they've updated Nancy Drew probably 5 times. But this was back when they were probably in, 40s automobiles, 30s automobiles. She loved that. So they always had those illustrations, those one-pagers that would maybe be the first thing leading into a chapter. So I just thought it was a cool retro thing to invoke. And she, Faye Dalton, this is so incredible. And they're... In the ebook, they're all in color. In the book, they're in black and white. But eventually, we will do a color version, I think, in a larger format. I didn't answer your question, but Rosie the Riveter is presented more as, which is true, as a marketing campaign, as a PR campaign.
Right.
And in the terms of the story, there's a woman who had been chosen to be the model for Rosie the Riveter, to be the one who would get her pictures taken and would pose for Norman Rockwell and all that kind of stuff. She's who gets murdered. And Fancy Anders is she's a very wealthy gal who's in her early 20s. She's just got out of college. And her mother's a very socialite, high society, snooty person. But the father is an ex-cop who became an incredibly important, successful in Los Angeles, private detective whose agency works for all the big studios. And so he's got money too. So, but they're very different worlds, the parents. And she is attracted more to the world of her father. And she finally works her way into being able to kind of work there as a secretary. And then when the war starts, he gets called up to be involved with the OSS. And he basically says to her, watch the phone. We're going to shut the agency down, essentially. You make the referrals, dust the desks, because we've letting all of the agents are off fighting for whoever, for Uncle Sam. But once her father's gone and she has some opportunities to do some undercover work, she goes for it. And this is her going into a defense plant, into an aircraft plant. And what's fun to me about it is that she is dealing with social classes she's never dealt with before. Because just as women got pumped into the workforce in World War II, a lot of minorities got pumped in as well, because it was like, you know, do you have a pulse? I mean, that was basically the requirement. Do you have a pulse? And so she goes in and she's working with, you know, Hispanics and Blacks and whoever, and a few men who have not changed much. So there's sexist activity underway, which she has to deal with. So she's a fish out of water in that sense. But in another sense, these are very traditional private eye mystery stories. And I would say she's sort of like, she's a little bit in the ballpark of my Ms. Tree character, who you guys may be familiar with.
Well, and go ahead, Justin.
What put you in this world? What made you want to dive into this very specific time and place?
Well, again, I heard you mention Road to Perdition, so you know I have a kind of a affinity for the 30s and 40s, and I've written a lot about the 30s and 40s. I spent most of my life in the 20th century. I'm not that crazy about the 21st century so far. I mean, you guys don't have much choice, do you? But
here we are.
Yeah,
I mean, none of us have a lot of choices unless you have an idea we don't know about.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you know something that
well,
we
that's
don't
another
know
book. Even. That's another one.
Okay.
All right. That's coming in about a month.
Okay.
I never really have done Hollywood and L.A. much in the historical detective stuff I've done. And because I have a character called Nathan Heller, who's been in about 15 books, and every single one of them is about a real crime, a real unsolved or controversially solved crime. So I've done the Lindbergh kidnapping. Some of them aren't crimes so much as mysteries. Like I've done Amelia Earhart. I've done Roswell. I've done all this stuff with a private eye, with a very traditional Philip Marlowe, Mike Hammer kind of private eye in period. Because I didn't want to just do a period private eye. I wanted to do something that had a more historical basis. Now, Fancy Anders is a little bit more fanciful. Pardon that. there actually is a real crime at the heart of some of what's going on, and it's you know, it's fairly tough stuff. It was in real life a bathtub murder, someone who was, you know, a woman who was strangled in the bathtub, which is not a cozy teacup kind of mystery story.
No.
Well, this is the flip side of Justin's question, but what keeps drawing you back to mystery in particular? Because that's something, like you're pointing out, you've written dozens, if not hundreds of times.
Well, I think genre fiction is attractive in general because it almost all is set up so there's inherently a conflict. Mm-hmm. And a story isn't really a story, as far as I'm concerned, if it doesn't have a conflict. When you're doing mystery and crime, inherently there's a conflict. Somebody got murdered. Somebody got robbed. Somebody got swindled. And so
strangled in a bathtub.
Great example.
So you walk in the door with something already going on. And the other thing is, you know, what I get hit on a lot, it has have many writers in this area, is the sex and violence, you know. That's they always say, why do you do sex and violence? But what I always say is, well, sex is life and violence is death, and those are kind of the two big topics.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. It. And so I think You know, some of the major mystery writers, I'm involved with the estate of Mickey Spillane, continuing the Mike Hammer stuff.
Mm.
And Mickey was a comic book writer. He was a contemporary of Stan Lee's in the Golden Age. Huh. Mickey wrote for Timely Comics. He was working at the Funnies Incorporated, who did Marvel number one.
Yeah.
And so he was a writer. Some of what he wrote is a little obscure now, but he did Blue Bolt, and he did some Captain America. He had a lot of Submariner.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, one of the first things he'd tell you when you started talking comics was that, you know, was that Namor was Roman spelled backwards, you know. he thought that was cool.
And wow, so, I've never known that.
Yeah, never. Namor's your favorite. That's your guy.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Well, no, he's not my guy. But
well, you kind of remind me of him a lot. You know?
That's weird. Okay. Yeah. It's my ankle wings.
It's funny about comic book characters. I know I would have comic book characters that had some obvious pun that I never saw. There was a character in a comic strip called Joe Palooka. The girlfriend was named Ann Howe. I never put together and how.
Oh, right? That's really funny.
I mean, I probably read it 20 years, and when I went, oh, I think that's, yeah. Now, some people do get Ms. Tree pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Pretty much on the
note. That one I got to, yeah.
Yeah.
Imperious Rex. Okay, makes a lot of sense now that I think about it.
We've got a question
here. I was going to call Road to Perdition Gun and Son. I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
What do you think it is about that one in particular that has stuck around so long in the imagination? Like, clearly that hit with comic book fans and non-comic book fans alike in a very big way.
Which is
stuck Road around? To Perdition in particular.
Well, you know, it was really startling at the time because initially DreamWorks wanted to hide the fact that it was from a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. So funny.
The very first poster said based on the novel by and we insisted that they put graphic novel.
Oh, that's so funny. What a change has occurred since that
day. I was walking down I was at the premiere in Chicago, red carpet, and you know, DreamWorks kind of wanted to keep me, you know, they didn't really want me around. I called up and said, you know, I did create this. I'd kind of like to come here.
Be cool if I got to put in this.
So I'm walking on the red carpet, and the thing that people were shouting at me was, Max, what's a graphic novel?
You're like, that's sort of a long answer. So give me a minute.
Well, then over the next, you know, 2-3 weeks when all the promo was happening, I did interviews with USA Today and Entertainment Weekly, and the subject was, what's a graphic novel?
Wow, that's so funny.
Because, and if you think about it, there weren't just a lot. There were a few from undergrounds, but there weren't really a lot of movies made from comics that weren't superhero.
Yeah.
And there really weren't that many superhero at the time, but there were some, obviously. Yeah. So that has stuck around. I think that the fact that it is, to some degree, an American take on Lone Wolf and Cub, it has a major part of how it's stuck around. And doesn't hurt that the movie had Tom Hanks and, you know, Paul Newman. And there was this new guy named Daniel Craig. And an incredible cast.
Yeah.
Well, and Edward Doherty here in the comments points out that Tyler Hoechlin, who's playing Superman now on the CW,
DC,
was a little
he's
kid.
He's still in the DC universe.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Still in the DC universe.
Awesome. This is a question from Kevin in the comments. Particularly with mysteries, how does the medium from prose to comic book to comic strip affect your approach?
Well, first I have an admission to make, which is when people ask me, artistically, how do you decide which one you'll do? It's like who's buying?
Yeah.
Who's got the
money?
The honesty. Yeah.
And so but there's a lot of differences. I think what I really like about comics, and I was attracted to comics initially. I mean, as a kid, that's what I wanted to do, was to do comic books.
Yeah.
and comic strips. I just think that the combination of music, you know, words and music, it's pictures and words. And when you get somebody that can do the right balance and isn't being too redundant, it's hard to beat. And it's this in between novels. What I like about novels is that you really are, you create a movie that plays in the head of the reader. Yeah. But the bad thing for me is that I have that collaborator, right? Nice. And then, you know, sometimes I play Broadway, and sometimes I play the 3 Mile Island Community Theater. And that's out of my hands, you know.
Yeah.
But with comics and with movies, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And there's less to argue about, and there's I think one of the reasons why comic book fandom happened, and I kind of saw it happen, because let me tell you, while I was in high school, I was the guy that read comic books.
Right.
I was that strange guy that read comic books.
Yeah.
And this is a mid-60s. This is, and what changed it, nobody wants to hear this, but what changed it was the Batman TV show. Because that's when people started reading comics. That's when the Marvel comics took off.
Yeah.
And changed everything. But I think that the thing about comics fandom is because it's such a shared experience that it makes you a community.
Right.
And it's an unruly community, granted, but it does make you a community.
Now, go ahead, Justin.
Oh, I was just going to say, I really love that thought, because I feel like the rise of comic fandom has come at a time when everyone's sort of community is built less around who they're actually physically around and what their interests are. And so the fact that comics have been able to become this like almost prime time community, all of like someone like you who was like waiting in the wings for this to happen, a little bit for us who were sort of behind you in that, but now it's just like, that community is so large. I wonder what the experience is like for people picking up comics now for the first time.
I think it's just kind of accepted as one of the storytelling art forms. And it's really what it should be if you get right down to it. I mean, I look back on how I used to have to defend comics.
Oh yeah, man.
And that doesn't happen. I mean, you still do to a certain degree, but you know, when I was a really little kid, and I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 years old, that's when Dr. Wertham was doing his thing. And they used to, in Parents Magazine, and every parent bought it, every month they would list the comics you weren't supposed to let your kid read.
Oh, wow.
Most of them.
Yeah, and you know, now my saving grace was my mother had fallen in love with the Dick Tracy comic strip when she was in San Diego when my dad was in the Navy during World War II. It hadn't been in the Iowa newspaper she saw as a little girl. And she loved the strip. And so when I was, I swear, 5, 6 years old, she introduces me to Dick Tracy.
Wow.
And we're talking about bullets flying through brains. And God bless her. and I just I've never been right since. I mean, honestly.
Well, but you ended up writing. You ended up writing Dick Tracy too, right? So that must have felt
that's quite bizarre, really. Yeah, I did. When I was 7, my mother sent. This is not going to be as long as stories. This isn't. I'm not going to talk to you about the log cabin I was raised in or anything. But when I was 7, my mom got together a bunch of my Dick Tracy drawings and sent them to Chester Gould, the creator of Dick Tracy.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And then on my 8th birthday, I got a drawing from him.
Ah.
And then awesome. So then I began to write him and say, someday when you get tired of doing the strip, I'd like to do the strip. Well, now that didn't exactly get answered, but years later, when I started. My first few books came out, my first novels came out. I sent them to Gould. And we'd corresponded when I was a little kid for a little while. So he kind of remembered me. And so I began going in and seeing him became friends with him. And it was, you know, in the Tribune Tower, I get to go up and see him working at his drawing board.
Wow.
I was at this point, I would have been probably 23 years old or so, 22, 23. And so a few years later, in 1977, he was going to retire. And I don't know if he ever recommended me, but I had a weird situation where I'd written some books, mystery novels, crime novels, that had a character in them who was a comic book fan. Mm-hmm. And when the Tribune Syndicate was looking for somebody to take Dick Tracy over, they decided they'd get a mystery writer. Mm-hmm. And so when they asked around, several people said, well, there's this guy in Iowa, probably said this kid in Iowa, who seems, you know, who's a mystery writer, seems to know something about Dick, about comics and Dick Tracy. And then as happens, I had sold a comic strip idea to a newspaper syndicate and it got bought, but the editor got fired. But they went to that particular individual, a guy named Rick Marshall, and he recommended me. So they'd heard my name from a couple of people. And so I get a phone call and they ask me if I would try out for it. And they said they're having a talent hunt. And so, you know, I had worked on a newspaper in college and I knew about deadlines.
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote the story overnight. There was no FedEx. Sent it, special delivery. And in 2 days, I had a phone call and they invited me to Chicago.
Wow.
So I was sitting in this hotel room with the publisher and editor of Tribune Media Services. And you may have had this happen to you. Sometimes you're in a job interview and about halfway through you realize, this isn't an interview. I have this job.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, and don't, right? You sort of see, it's a great feeling, but it's also a little scary because you're like, oh, now what do I do?
Now you have to turn it around, right?
You gotta be like, okay, let's do this, as opposed to like, well, so I'm good at this. Yeah. Then it's like, oh, it's time to talk about doing it.
One of the things they asked me was, they said, could you make it more like Starsky and Hutch? Because that's the big thing right now. And I said to them, I remember what I said to them. I said, Starsky and Hutch will be gone in a couple of years. Dick Tracy's been here since 1931. Let's not talk about Starsky and Hutch.
Wow. Strong stance.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So I did it for 15 years until I ran into an editor who hated me.
Oh, no.
And we did not get along. And I got fired off of the strip after 15 years.
Wow.
And well, then I went to a WonderCon and pitched Road to Perdition. And as they say, the rest is history.
Wow. Serendipitous on both ends of your work on Dick Tracy. Like, that's great.
It was great. And, you know, I probably would have done it the rest of my life if I could have. And I think, I had a good friend, an editor, a guy named Mike Gold, who was an editor at DC, who said, would have been the worst thing in the world to happen to you if you had kept doing it. Because it required me to try to do other things. And
yeah.
And I do see that's a difference, I think, today among comics creators. I think that they don't necessarily say, okay, I'm going to write the Avengers for 100 issues.
Oh, for sure. Almost the opposite. It's like, hey, I have these three arcs I want to do, and then I'm out.
And I think that's healthier from a creative standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, that all said, do you ever get a hankering to go back to comics at any point?
In terms of writing them?
Yeah.
Well, I did. I still do now and then. I did a couple of years ago, a year or two ago, I have a character called Quarry, who's a hitman who's appears in novels and has for many years. And I did. And there was a TV show on Cinemax based on those novels.
Yes.
Called Quarry. And so I did a graphic novel, a Quarry graphic novel. And that was for Titan. And then I also did a My Camera graphic novel for Titan. And there are also two other Road to Perdition graphic novels.
Right.
I haven't done anything that's sort of what I think, and I've done a few things. I did a couple of Batman graphic novels. One I'm proud, really proud of is I did the English version of Kia Asamiya's Child of Dreams, is really, and I think if you want to see my Batman work, that's what you should look at.
Great rec.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, cool. And Fancy Anders is out on October 5th, right? Is it just digital, or
it's as I say, it's a novella.
Okay.
So it's about 30,000 words, but it will be available in. You guys look to me like physical media guys.
You got that right.
And because that was a thing I insisted on, because it was originally bought basically as an ebook. And I said, I gotta see it. I gotta hold it.
Yeah, give me that paper.
Yeah, I want to hold it, read
and
it.
So that's gonna happen. And Faye Dalton's work is just phenomenal. I've done two more of these, and that will be out over the next year and a half. And then I hope they'll be collected, because Faye will have done over 30 illustrations for these.
That's awesome!
Wow.
Full color, full page.
Awesome! Love that.
I can't believe you guys found out a way to hook me in here.
I'm so glad it worked out.
It's such a great conversation.
It sounds like I'm talking down I'm in the outhouse talking down the hole.
Yeah. That's the way we work.
That's our podcast. Yeah, that's how podcasts work.
Exactly. Down the outhouse hole. That's what we say. Let's do this. Let's dive down the outhouse hole.
Listening to, and I met Stan a couple of times, Stanley a couple of times.
Oh, cool.
Very sweet guy.
Awesome. Yes. Max, thank you so much.
I always liked the way he pretended to know me.
he was great at that.
About him? Yeah,
he was. I think the couple times we interviewed him, he did that also. And I was like, there's no way you remember me. So.
Max, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure. Good luck with the book. Very excited to check it out.
Thank you so much. I know I talked over you a bit because I can't hear you that well here. But
no, truly, it was great.
You're the guest. Yeah,
perfect. Talk over yeah. much
All right, let's do this again sometime.
Would All love right. to. Yeah. Please.
Thanks, Max. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Take care of yourself.
All right.
Oh,
Max
man, that was
Allen
fun.
Collins. Yeah. Fun. Fancy Anders Goes to War comes out October 5th, so you can check that out everywhere.
I'm going to look up that Batman book.
Yes.
Child of Dreams, he said, right?
Just mention, before we move on with the next section, my absolute favorite part of that interview was when he said bathtub murders. And to a T, every one of us were like, yes, we know what that is.
the bathtub murders.
No need to explain. No,
I've started so many stories with a bathtub murder.
My favorite part about that was like him being the, you know, the comic book nerd, and like what that was like to defend comics back in the day.
It's so funny. I didn't want to get into it with Max here, but I was like, Pete, you prefer that comic book lifestyle. Yeah. Like that's one of the reasons why I asked the question. Cause like someone growing up now doesn't have to defend it as hard. And I was like, Pete, you would actually dislike it now. Yeah. Because you want to be out there being like, yeah, I'm reading a comic. What's it to you?
Say something. Say something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's great. All right, folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in Ask a Question over here on Crowdcast or over on YouTube. You can drop a question in the comments. I will be keeping an eye on that. But first, guys, time to pay a couple of bills here. Attention, listeners across the galaxy. It is time to talk about Manscaped and the Performance Package 4.0. Performance Package 4.0 has so many great things in it. It is chock full of things for you to get, including the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance Boxer briefs, a travel bag to hold everything in, and an exclusive graphic novel.
What?
Whoa.
No, what? That's not true. I'm lying.
Oh,
about that.
That would be a very graphic novel, if I may say. That is something that
graphic.
I don't...
Too graphic. Yeah.
Too graphic. Though I feel like a lot of the stories we've got into during these ad reads have involved a lot of graphic detail from Mr. Pete LePage. So I feel like I've sort of lived a graphic novella.
So the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is a fourth generation trimmer. It has a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Pete, any grooming accidents while you've been using it?
No, it's been
describe in detail.
Bad.
None.
The light is just such a great idea.
Ooh, a light accident. You've blinded yourself.
Right, Pete? Blind?
What?
Pete? What?
No.
Okay.
I don't know
why. It also has, let's see, the Performance Package 4.0 also has the Weed Whacker, which takes care of your nose and ears. This actually says, oh, Pete left. It actually says ear here. So I don't know which ear it takes care of, but it's one of them. It's either the left or the right.
Very Picasso. Picasso actually famously only trimmed the ear hair on one of his ears.
Picasso? Not Vincent Van Gogh?
That's Vincent Van Gogh is who I mean. Vincent Van Gogh is who I mean. Vincent Van Gogh is who I mean.
Great.
I mean, there's a lot of artists that have ear-based accidents.
Absolutely. I mean, because you put Picasso, the paintbrush back there.
Picasso's famous for having very clear ears. I wasn't talking about the Van Gogh story. That would be ghost Picasso, to bring up in a shaving.
The main thing everybody remarks about with Picasso is, wow, that guy had very clean ears. Yes.
The cleanest. Absolutely. He used to pay for his lunches with how clean his ears were.
Oh. That's great. He probably used the Weed Whacker performance trimmer.
Alex, I appreciate what you're doing here, but let me just say, get 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you. No questions at this time.
Let's move on to what we're drinking tonight. Now, we talked about the official drink, but I don't know if other stuff has popped up. Pete, what are you drinking? What are you checking out?
Oh, we certainly moved on to a second drink at this point.
Pacifico. Drink a little Pacifico. It's good beer.
Nice. You know, I love a Pacifico. When I want a light beer, it's a Pacifico. 100%.
I would drink
the bottle. I would drink out of the bottle, though. I've got here my standard for quite a while.
Wait, dude, I didn't have the choice of a bottle. Don't come at me because I'm drinking out of a can, motherfucker.
Yeah, no. Take your cans and go home, is I guess what I'm saying. Grippa Grapefruit IPA from Cisco Brewery in Nantucket, Mass. Nope, I elbowed this disgusting water and knocked over the series of bottles and cans I have set up here.
And I'm drinking, as usual, a Mountain Dew.
No, you are not. No, you are not.
That better be closed. It better be a closed fake drink. Yeah, it's good.
Good, man. Crack it open. Come on.
I will at some point. I still don't want to drink a Mountain Dew at night. It'll really keep me up.
Next time we're doing one of the early tapings, we should definitely crack one up.
Absolutely. Next time we do Candyman.
I believe the official slogan for Mountain Dew is "Do the Dew during daytime." They don't want you to do the Dew at night.
Yeah. Mountain Dew, not after 4 p.m., buddy.
Do the Dew a day. Do the Dew during the day.
All right, we got some questions here on Crowdcast. This is from Stray Bullet. Are there any modern comics or characters that you think would make a great radio serial show, like the new Batman: The Audio Adventures? I'll go first. Lock and Key. And Kevin points out Audible did Lock and Key 6 years back. It had Tatiana Maslany as Dodge, and it was very good. So not that one, but other comics that you would want to see as an audio drama.
I want to see Concrete as an audio drama.
Wow, great. That's a good answer. Very wordy and also very moody, sort of emotional, moody, philosophical. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of Concrete this week a lot, Pete, and we will discuss it at a later date. The answer I was going to have has left my brain with all that Concrete talk, but I will no doubt think of it in a second.
What about Headlopper? Headlopper would be good.
Starman, Headlopper. What other thing are you doing?
No, we don't. Here's the thing, guys. We don't have to say the things that we always say. We can say other answers, like as if we're constantly looking at the work in front of us and examining what it is.
Kevin,
you know, here's the answer I had.
Squirrel Girl. All right, stop bringing it up every time.
I think Tom King's work would translate very well to audio. I think he does a great job of really speaking in characters, having his characters speak in their own voices, which would translate greatly to radio.
I think Rorschach in particular would be a really good choice there. That would work really, really well as a radio.
That was my first thought, but I expanded because I think Strange Adventures as well, especially with jumping between the two character points of view in between each issue, I thought would be very cool for a radio.
Yeah, you could even give it two different radio tones. Do the Ron sections as like a very old school radio serial type thing, and then cut back and forth to something more realistic. Like a podcast, like they're doing the rest of it on a podcast or something.
Oh, man. Imagine doing a podcast. That'd be crazy,
the dream,
dude. Yeah.
This is from Nelson Martinez over on YouTube. Have you guys checked out Squid Game yet? I binged and loved the show. Would love to hear your thoughts on it. I am dying to watch that. that has been a runaway hit on Netflix and a surprise hit too, which yesterday they said is on pace to be their biggest show of all time.
Which
I don't think anybody, including Netflix, even expected. They seem surprised about it as well. Basically, it's a Korean drama, I believe. It's sort of like a Hunger Games type thing, but seems very intense, very exciting, very fun. But I haven't checked it out yet.
I also haven't watched it yet, but it has jumped onto my list of things to watch. I am just getting into Foundation right now.
Wait, what do you think?
It's good, and it's dense off the jump. I also want to be like, this is a real Dune drop. It's like a Dune punch in the face before Dune comes out.
Yep.
But I guess that's what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's just coincidence that they're coming out at the same time, but it definitely feels like, well, got here a month earlier. There you go.
Beat you, Dune. Suck it, Dune.
Suck it, dude. Suck it, Denis Villeneuve. This from Kevin. What are some of your favorite serialized comic strips?
I'll tell you what. I haven't read a ton of comic strips.
Golden
Grahams?
Golden Grahams. That's a cereal.
Yeah, that's a cereal. Not a comic, Kevin. Wow. Alex, so mad. And then,
so mad right out of the box. Count Chocula? That'll make you less mad? Mm-hmm. What's it that?
Does Bloom County count?
I mean, I think serialized are sort of like the Spider-Man strip.
Sure.
Where they're telling a long story over time. And honestly, when as a comic book reader, I don't think they were really telling a continuing story. When I was reading comics and then being like, I like comics, let me read the Spider-Man strip. I was like, what? What's happening?
Oh, 100%. I used to read the comics page, not every day, but all the time. I loved reading it. When I got to the serialized ones, I'd be like, nope.
And I would read it, and it would just be Peter Parker being like, I don't know if I should go, Mary Jane, and her being like, you should. The end. I was like, how is this? What is this? What information is this here?
Yeah, this is not enough. I need more.
And everyone was signed, like Stan Lee. I was like, you signed that? Is it done? I don't think it's done.
Well, it's also because you look at like a regular comic strip, there's at least one joke there. Most of the serialized comic strips, nothing happens.
Yeah.
You have to read it for an entire week to get anything. What's that worth? Nothing.
In the comments, a lot of people shouting out Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
Not super serialized, but I mean, Calvin and Hobbes, top. When that was coming out. When that got the color bump in the full color spread, like, whew, just so good.
Kevin says, no Dick Tracy love. No. Okay. Let's see. This is from Stanley over on YouTube. Do you guys generally prefer comics using comedy, drama, or action?
Ooh, great question. I mean, truly, my answer is a blend of all three. I think comedy is very hard in comics. Not a lot of comics do it super well. When there's a comic that can have great action, great narrative drama, and still have a couple bits of fun in there, I think that's the top marks.
Yeah. Cool. This is from Pablo. Any news from The Loft yet? Pablo was asking about our own live performance space, The Pit Loft. They've started to do some shows occasionally, but we are not doing
it. It's mainly just like improv shows and stuff right now. They haven't.
It's like improv jams.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of jams. They're trying to kind of get people going back to the theater, building it back up a little bit.
Well, let me just quick comment on the New York comedy scene. It's hard out there right now. A lot of there's a lot of sort of venues bubbling up and trying to find their spot. And it's not easy right now. Not a lot of people are going out to see shows right now. I do think there's a lot of like sort of Brooklyn based comedy shows that are doing pretty well from what I've heard. But I worry that the comedy scene in New York is changing. It's becoming more like the LA comedy scene or something, where there are just fewer shows across the board.
So yeah,
but we'll be back in person
at some point. This is from Edward Doherty. Before the current era of comic book popularity, what films or TV did you enjoy because they had obscure references to comics, like the Silver Surfer conversation in Crimson Tide?
Oh, sick ref. Sick ref.
That is a sick ref. I mean, this is an answer that is already dated, but when I watched Mallrats and they talked about comics, I was like, whoa, these guys are in my head.
Yeah. I love the elevator conversation. I don't know how many kids have yelled at about the whole escalator thing.
Is this a Mallrats reference?
That's a Mallrats reference, and it's not about comics. It's just telling a kid to stay off the escalator.
It's important.
This is, again, from Pavlo. Have you ever fought for your right to read comics as far as what people say about them? Pete, I believe that's for you.
I mean, I used to, you know, get beat up for reading comics. It was real.
Can I ask you, and please don't, if this is a harsh memory, don't answer, but like, how did that go down? Like, it was literally like someone saw you reading a comic, and then they were like, let's get him? Or was it more like, that guy's a nerd because he read comics, I've seen him over time, I want to get
him? The nerd thing. I mean, I had Coke bottle glasses, and you know, like,
and to be clear, that was like literal Coke bottles.
That I did coke.
They were full.
Because I was a nerd.
They were cocaine bottle glasses.
Yeah.
Cocaine. People don't talk about that too much, how nerdy it was to do tons
that's
of
right.
cocaine back.
Now it's all mainstream.
Just like comics. Cocaine used to be for nerds, and now it's cool. Just like,
did you guys see the movie American Psycho? Because I remember seeing that, and people were like, what's this fucking nerd doing on screen? This asshole Patrick Bateman. Stuff him in a locker. Come on.
Yeah.
Get out. Come on.
Yeah, but being shoved in lockers and, you know, stuff like that was not fun, but unfortunately it was part of my comeuppance, my growing up as a child.
And sorry, just to say, you grew up in... you grew up in a 1950s movie, Pete?
Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah.
We've got a question here from Randolph on Crowdcast. Was the Pussycats of Riverdale episode a official backdoor pilot? Sorry if this is asked when it was aired. Surprisingly, for anybody who watched it, it was not a backdoor pilot. It was just crazily a regular episode of Riverdale that had all the trappings of a backdoor pilot and ended teeing off a spinoff for Josie and the Pussycats that may never happen. I think... We did talk about this on the Riverdale podcast. I think the idea, this is me just sort of supposing a bunch of stuff, but my best guess here is when you're doing a backdoor pilot, there's an expectation of, are we going to pick this up to series? There are conversations about this. More likely what they probably said was, hey, it would be great to have a Pussycat spinoff. We don't necessarily have any plans for it, but CW, WB, would you okay if we build this like this? And just kind of put that in there. And they're probably like, sure, that sounds fine. That's fun. That's a typical Riverdale kind of thing to happen. And then they'll take a look at the online conversation, the streaming numbers, etc. And then if there is enough demand there, have an actual conversation about a spinoff.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as a line producer, you do that, deal with that a lot, right? Looking at numbers, look, you know.
Looking at numbers? Yeah, I guess. I mean, don't we all look at numbers on our day-to-day basis?
But when you're working the line, I see a couple of numbers when you're right producing now. A line, like it's just constantly, you know.
Producing a line, you say. Yeah. Okay.
You do, so people, man, we should probably explain this. We've done this bit a lot. But a line producer, you guys have seen The Matrix. There are all those numbers falling down the screen,
exactly.
The line.
Yeah.
Each line producer is in charge of one of those lines.
Yeah, my job is to make sure all the numbers are in a line, and it's really hard because a lot
of
the numbers.
Yeah, you got to decipher it, you know, and kind of like translate it into something that people can understand. As it comes down the screen.
And I feel like I just to do a sort of a service for people who listen to this, maybe not every episode. I am not a line producer. That's a very specific job, and that is not my job.
You have been a line producer.
I have never been a line producer. I've worked many jobs in production all across the map, but I have never. A line producer is someone who is like very high up and in charge of the of vast sums of money. Something that
really,
yes. Producers who make sure everyone gets paid.
Wow, that's a big job. Congratulations, Justin.
Yeah, I'm proud of you, buddy.
All right, we got one last question here. This is from Liwana Nana. Have any of you shot murder hornets at children lately? People either really love this question or get grumpy at me about it. The suspense is killing me. And there's a follow-up. Also, what's your favorite anti-corporate Dairy Queen?
Wow.
Oh, well,
targeted to Pete from Pete's house.
Honestly, some of my favorite questions we get here on the podcast.
Me too.
Because there's so much backstory we need to know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you why. Because I know before you answer, Pete, because we're going to get to your answer, I swear. This isn't an Arrow Corner situation at all. But let me say really briefly, when we ask Pete a question, he's like, I'm not going to answer that. I don't want to answer that. Yeah. When Luana asks Pete a question on her podcast, he answers that shit. and I love to hear it.
All right. Great. So I went to this Dairy Queen that Luana lives near, and it's a famous Dairy Queen because they're kind of like anti-corporation, even though they're a Dairy Queen and they kind of like do things differently, and they're very proud of the things that they do over there. And it's adorable, fantastic Dairy Queen. But so it was my first time being at a Dairy Queen a long time, and like it was exciting to kind of be there, and they have this giant kind of like a cone and stuff outside. So there's this family there, and we're kind of like waiting in line, but it turns out that's where you pick up your ice cream line, not the place, the order line, you know, kind of rookie move on my part. I'm about to kind of like, you know, run in line here with excitement for my ice cream. But there's this family, this mom and these two kids, and they're even more excited about ice cream than me, if you can believe it.
Not possible.
Yeah. So, you know, there was part of me was like, hey, maybe I should stop and let this family in front of me, you know, because they have children, you know, they need ice cream. But I was like, no, fuck that. I was first and I want my ice cream. And so as I'm standing there placing the order, this giant bee like comes up next to me, and like, you know, I'm trying to place my order, and so I kind of like kick this bee, and I kicked the bee, and I kicked it right at this kid, and the kid starts screaming because the bee stings this little kid, and the mom is like at me like, what the fuck did you just do to my kid? And so she's dragging this kid away screaming. But the heartbreaking part was the other kid, because he's just looking at his brother and then looking at the ice cream like, I was this close to getting ice cream. But now the mom's like dragging them all back to the house to get like medication for, you know, because the kid's probably allergic or something.
Wow. This
kid probably died of a bee sting. Yeah,
probably. But man, I tell you guys, Dairy Queen, worth murdering kids over. It is great ice cream.
Let me ask you, Pete. What in this bee moment, what made you think kick? Because I feel like you've been watching too much Ted Lasso, perhaps, that you feel like you have some sort of foot, like foot is the way to attack something.
Well, it was, in my defense, by flying around my legs. So that's why kick was the thing that happened. Yeah.
Hmm. I just didn't know you had the skill to target that. Because I'm assuming you kicked it. You kicked that bee at that kid purposefully to get him out of your way for the ice cream, because he was sort of making inroads toward your Dairy Queen moment.
I wish I don't have that kind of control.
Wait, when did this happen? Because I remember there was a big report about the Dairy Queen bee death, and I'm not sure if it's the same.
Yeah, could be unrelated.
Oh my God, please don't tell me.
And let me ask you, how often do you call Luana your Dairy Queen?
That's not,
nope.
All right, we're going to move on with our next section, which is
feels like an idea. Feels like an option.
We're going to move on to trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to the lovely audience.
What was the pause there?
I didn't know if you were going to be like, we selected someone because we spreadsheet.
He's been stung by many bees right now. Pete is fully engorged.
Being stung by bees. This part we give back to the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card online to Midtown Comics. So if you would like a
Pablo gift card, just raised his hand.
All right, Pablo.
Here we
come
go.
On in, Pablo.
Okay, we're going to bring Pablo into the stream, and then Pablo is probably going to win $25, so that's pretty exciting.
Oh, that's very exciting.
We shall see. That kid thought he was going to probably get ice cream at Dairy Queen, and he had a harsh reality presented to him.
Pete kicks a virtual bee at Pablo.
Yeah.
Well, did we run out of things to say?
Oh, I felt the cue is coming up. There it is.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Pablo.
Pablo.
How are you?
Pablo.
Good evening, fellas.
All right. So today's trivia is on topical comic news, and a small nod to the legend Melvin Van Peebles. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. All right, here we go. Question number one. Who is the new host of the Phoenix Force and getting their own new solo series? Is it A, Echo, B, Okoye, or is it C, Halle Berry? So it's either A, or you could pick B.
I have to go with A.
A is correct. Nice. Echo. Getting her own series. Very excited about that. Should be cool. All right, here we go. Question number two. Batman the Imposter asks the question, what if blank? Is it A, Batman existed in the real world? B, what if Batman lived on Staten Island? Or is it C, Eartha Kitt? So it's either A, what if Batman was real? Or you could be completely wrong.
I won't, because it will be A.
A is nice. Correct.
So if Batman lived on Staten Island, he would also be real.
Would he, or would he be a caricature?
Let me ask you, do you know where Staten Island is real?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
I'm just saying, if you saw Pete Davidson, would you think to yourself, this is a real person, or is this a caricature?
Definitely not.
Not real, not a real person. That's okay, what you...
That's what I'm saying, Staten Island. Check it out. All right, here we go, last one.
Don't check
Who's
it out.
Who's getting a new costume in their 30th issue? Is it A, Harley Quinn, B, Miles Morales, or C, Robin Givens? So it's either A, Harley Quinn, don't pick it, or it's B, Miles Morales.
It has to be B, Mr. Morales himself.
That's yes. right. B is correct.
Congratulations.
$25 is yours.
Pablo, shoot us an email. We will get that off to you. Always good seeing you. Have a lovely night.
Pablo!
All right, Pablo. There we go, Pablo. Now, what was... Is Boomerang the secret movie that you were taking?
That's right. That's
good
right.
job, Kevin.
Was correct.
Getting it as usual. Speaking of getting things as
Wait,
usual...
real yes. quick before you just I want to read two comments, which I thought were very fun. From Stray Bullet, Pete has stories that if anyone else told them, you'd be like, that didn't happen. But because it's Pete, it happened. Which I thought was very true. And then one other one. People ask if last week's Comic Book Club was a backdoor pilot for a Kevin podcast. No, it wasn't. Also very funny. That was from Kevin. So it's not like that's mean. Because Kevin, obviously.
Yeah.
Real listeners will know that we did.
Closed
the door.
Ones.
Only exactly. the real ones know that we closed the book on the Kevin quiz last week.
One thing we didn't close the book on, though, is new comics, because they're coming out all the time. Folks, what are you looking forward to? Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
Well, I'm so glad you asked me. I'm looking forward to the Sandman Universe Lock and Key Hell and Gone number 2. Something is Killing the Children number 20, and then Miles Morales Spider-Man number 30.
Wow, that was Justin.
Well, since Pete listed many comics, I'm going to say that I am looking forward to the Lock and Key Sandman crossover issue that's coming out tomorrow. Hoof, that is going to be a good read, is my gut feeling. What a great way to touch both universes equally.
I've never checked out the Sandman or Lock and Key, but I'm really interested to delve in with this second issue of this miniseries here.
Yeah, start here. Starting point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of starting points, I'm very interested to check out Inferno number 1 from Marvel Comics, which is the final story that Jonathan Hickman is telling in the X-Men universe, at least for now. So should be very interesting to see what's happening, given all the hype going into that one. Well, and the fact that Inferno, the original Inferno, is my favorite X-Men crossover of all time.
Oh,
so we'll
wow.
see
it's this. Coming full circle. Look at that.
Yeah, the beginning of my life and the end of my life.
Yeah, so you walk away.
I'm glad I was here for both. I'm glad I was here for both.
That's pretty great. You weren't there for the first.
And you can check out all of those comics and many more in our Stack podcast that come in the Comic Book Club feed or its own dedicated Stack feed, 9 a.m. on Wednesdays, so check it out. And that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Ryan Silbert and Luke Lieberman for coming on Stan Lee's Alliance and New Reality. is out on Audible right now and in bookstores very soon. Also, Max Allen Collins for Fancy Anders Goes to War. Check that out digitally on October 5th, as well as in print, as he pointed out, which is very cool. Next week, we're going to have two more great guests are going to be here. Sophie Escapace is going to be here to talk about Witches of Brooklyn, What the Hex? An all-ages graphic novel. Also, Corin Chodney is coming back to the show to talk about Lugosi, The Rise and Fall of Hollywood's Dracula. So two spooky books to kick off the spookiest month.
It is spooky season. Yeah.
Speaking of spooky, it's scary how many podcasts we're doing, including Why the Cast Man.
Why the Last Man
podcast is running right now. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is running right now, recapping What If. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, almost done with season 5 here. Our Stargirl podcast, that goes up Tuesdays right after that show at 9 p.m., so we got to rush off and do that one.
We got to do this on time.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support all the shows we do. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow. Also on iTunes, leave us a question in the iTunes review. We'd love to read them on the show, or suggest a book for us to review, and we'll do that as well. We'll do that at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Thanks, everybody. Hey, Matt.
Thanks to all of our Dairy Queens out there.